When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the EDH Reccast. My name is Joey Schultz and I'm joined, as always, by my fantastic co-hosts. Up first, he puts the card in cardio. It's Matt Morgan.
Speaking of cardio, you should always watch out for the birds who are working on the bench press because they always have the strongest pecs.
Oh, wow. Matt, you should really tweet that one.
I would, but I really don't want to show off my chicks pack.
Wow.
That's an abs joke.
Oh, A plus on that's you've really applied yourself this week and I absolutely love it. All right.
I am really flying away with these.
Yes. And you know what? To continue with the fitness jokes a little bit, up next, just like me, he's really into deadlifting. And by that, I do mean reanimator spells. It's Dana Roach.
My 2021 New Year's resolution was to read more, and I got off to a pretty good start until like around June. Then the subtitles got turned off on my TV and I like couldn't get them back on. So I was not able to actually meet my resolution. But I hope that I make it in 2022.
In 2022, you mean 2023?
I mean that too.
That too, okay, maybe.
See, I thought it was going to be a joke about Strixhaven and having to read a novel every day for every card.
Every card I would have read more. That would have got me there, yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious, you guys. This is a hoot. Anyway, this is the EDH Reccast. EDH Rec is the best deck building resource on the web for the Commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new Commander decks. And here on the podcast, what we'd like to do is give all of that data a little more context. Dana, do you mind telling us what it is that we're talking about in this week's episode?
We're going to talk about the current trends in EDH, the 2022 data roundup.
Yeah, sort of a final snapshot of the year, where Commander is according to the data on EDH Rec, and just like see what it's like as we're heading into 2023. Just get an idea of, you know, the most popular guilds, the most popular colors in Magic. Take a look at some actual like numbers here. Maybe especially an interesting one will be some mana curve numbers that I think are especially interesting. Just get an understanding of EDH as we head into a brand new year. But before we get into that juicy topic, we've got a couple of quick shout outs to do.
Well, speaking of mana curves, first we'd like to thank Chase, aka Mana Curves, for helping us edit the show. You can find them on Twitter at Mana Curves.
EDH Rec is also streaming on Whatnot. You can follow our content manager, Jason Alt, as he does awesome stuff on those Whatnot streams, like giveaways and cool stuff like that. Follow EDH Rec on social media to learn more. And if you want to sign up to be eligible for any of those awesome fun things, you can go to whatnot.com/invite/EDH Rec.
Well, speaking of most popular color pairs, you can like and subscribe this YouTube video. That's how it works, right? No, it doesn't really, but it still helps us. It's still a great way to support the show for free, or you can subscribe on your local podcast app, or you can go to patreon.com/EDHRecCast, where we have patron tiers of all sorts of levels, whether you want to join the Discord community, you want to see all the episodes a day early, all of that and more over at patreon.com/EDHRecCast. And as always, we're going to key in on a certain patron this week, and that is Alexander Gatke. So thank you, Alexander, for all of your support. We definitely appreciate it. And we keyed in. There it is again on the name. Joey, take it away from me now. Go.
I will take it away. I will take it. Thank you so much.
Let's get into the main show. I'm losing out. I'm losing steam.
Okay. I will take it from you, Matt. I will take you as we're running out of steam. We will get right into the topic. We are doing that 2022 data roundup, sort of a snapshot, wrapping up the year with an overview of the Commander format, comparing some recent stats against some previous stats. We've done some of these shows way in the past, looking at like these big broad numbers about the format to see where things are at, and we want to do that again here as we're moving into a brand new year.
Yeah, so the first thing that kind of jumps at me looking at these numbers is the total amount of decks in the database right now is closing in on 2 million. That's insane and unfathomable based on like looking at the numbers from 5 years ago. There's 1,864,000 decks in the database. That's an insane amount of decks people have put online.
Yeah, it turns out when you get 17 products per month with 18 legends per product,
right?
The sheer volume, I don't think we can undersell this, but the amount of just raw number of decks that we're seeing in the database these days from all the different websites we get decks from is almost overwhelming. And thankfully, we have a very, very good team that works in the background that they handle so much data, folks. It's a literal ton.
And make sure that that the site doesn't break underneath all of that, underneath all that bandwidth and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right.
I had a fun fact for you guys as well going into this episode. Maybe it's just fun for me. I don't know. But I think it's an interesting sort of balance about like how many of the top commanders control the population of that data. I don't know. I find this a very interesting figure. The top 179 commanders control 50% of the deck population on EDHREC. There are roughly, this is a little bit hard to track exactly because of things like backgrounds or partners and partner with and things like that, but there are roughly 1,604 legal commanders in the format. So the top 179 legal commanders have just as many decks as the other 1,425 commanders. That is interesting to me. I think that that's kind of wild.
I mean, turns out deck building economy mirrors real life economy.
Right. Yeah. I guess I'm not really surprised necessarily. It's kind of a shocking number to see. But like when you're out there in the wild, those most popular commanders do show up a lot. So I guess I am not really the number is shocking, but I'm not really surprised by how popular those most popular commanders actually are.
To me, I'm heartened by that figure because it used to be a much smaller number. Like when we ran this, I think we had a similar episode and we did a similar figure about a year ago, and it was closer to like 100 rather than 179. And granted, we are getting 3,000 billion new legendary creatures every 2 months or whatever. But like the fact is that this is more even than I think it used to be, and that's good to see. There is more legend diversity that is attracting attention. But yes, there is always going to be something way leaning at the top. The most interesting figure that I think we can get into, though, would be of particular interest to our co-editor here on the EDHREC cast, mana curves, because we want to talk about some mana curves. We've got some very interesting figures here. Dana, will you tell us what the average mana value is when you look at a deck? What is the current average mana value of decks these days?
Yeah, the current average mana value is just over 3.08. That's shockingly low compared to what it was the last time we checked 2 years ago when it was 3.33. Mm. That's a pretty significant dip. And that, I mean, there's a lot of cards that have to get changed out to lower a deck's mana value that low.
Yeah, this isn't just sweeping changes where you're dropping, you know, 1/8 drop for a 2 drop. This is years and years of people are taking out Cultivate. They're putting in Nature's Lore. They're taking out Demonic Tutor and putting in Diabolic Tutor. I had that backwards. They're taking out 4-mana Tutors and putting in 2-mana Tutors, whichever the names of the,
right.
The D-Tutor that was expensive is now the cheap one. But it's a little changes like that that just happen progressively over time where people tend, and rightly so because we're humans, they tend to optimize their decks. They're lowering the mana curves, they're making it more efficient. And those are just those little bitty incremental upgrades that we see people making. And now we're able to kind of measure that and show, yes, people actually are lowering the curve on their decks.
Well, so Dana, you pointed out there that when we checked this figure 2 years ago, the average CMC in an average deck was 3.33. Before that, we had checked it also in 2018. And then, so that's 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, it was 3.51. So over the past 4 years, the average mana value of an EDH deck has gone from 3.51 to 3.08. So we've got a trajectory here of not exactly half a point, but over the past 4 years, kind of nearly half a point of going down here. And that is very, like, that's a whoa. That is a whoa figure for sure.
Yeah, a very, very significant drop. And, you know, that kind of thing is always going to happen probably to a degree. You know, the new cool card comes out that's just slightly more efficient than the one you were running. Like, those are the kind of trade-offs you'll make. They drop that, like you mentioned, they drop the Cultivate for the three visits reprint or something when that becomes more available. And when you do that enough times, it does gradually lower your curve. And as people start playing a little bit more competitively, then you have to keep up. So you have to lower other things as well, you know, both intentionally and unintentionally. I'm not surprised the curves have dropped this much, but that's a pretty big drop over 40 years for sure.
I mean, basically, it's the equivalent of every deck taking out like a Thran Dynamo or a Hedron Archive and putting in any of these two mana rocks or putting in
multiple times.
Yeah, yeah, the three mana rocks that we always talk about how much we love the design space of. So take out a Thran Dynamo and put in a Cursed Mirror. And every deck that we see is roughly doing that.
But it's also like take out a Chromatic Lantern, put in a Liquimetal Torque. It's also that level as well. It's like Sky Shroud Claim no longer, but Nature's Lore, yes. Like it's a very subtle shift over time. Like this is, again, over the course of 4 years. But that does speak to, like, I don't know, I think we have each felt a different speed in the tempo of games that we play compared to 4 years ago. And it's been difficult to say necessarily that is always because of the exact mana values, like because of things like, you know, the Arcane Signets that come in and feel like they might force a swifter play pattern. That's been a very big discussion in the format for years at this point. But it also does sometimes feel like games get a little bit faster just because we have some ludicrously powerhouse commanders that if they stay on the field for more than one turn, they win the game outright. So like speed of the format is all types of wrapped up in this.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think there's probably a cap on this, though. Yes, technically the end result of continuing to lower your curve is you're, you know, basically playing CEDH. Like that, they have a super low curve in that format. And like, if you want to continue to optimize your decks, that's where they end up. But I don't think that's how people actually tend to work. Some people will work that way, and they'll start playing Commander with a, you know, relatively casual Battlecruise style deck, and they'll eventually move into playing like a competitive deck that has a super tight curve. But it's not really how most people do it. I look at like myself for an example. When I first started playing golf years ago, you know, I kind of got into it, found myself enjoying it. So I got a better set of golf clubs and I got a, you know, decent set of golf shoes. And I started, you know, going to the driving range once a week and hitting a bucket of balls. And my golf game got better. But that's also where I ended, right? Like I was going to the golf range once a week. I didn't buy a $10,000 set of golf clubs. I didn't start going to the range 5 days a week to make my game that much better. There's a cap, I think, on where most people will push it. And I would bet that we will see this curve continue to inch downward, but I don't think we're going to see like 4-point drops like we're seeing in the last several years. I think the rate of it arcing downward is going to slow, I would bet, when we revisit this down the road.
Yeah, there's definitely got to be a point of diminishing returns where eventually everything will level off. But we also said that last year. We said that, I'm sure we said that a couple years ago, where we kind of thought, originally, yeah, I think that maybe curves are getting lower and the average CMC is getting low. So I don't know where that ends up being is my question. WotC obviously has some optimization things going on with their fire design and all that. So I would have thought that we were going to hit that point, but I don't think we have.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm confident that we are going to hit that point sooner than maybe you feel, Matt. I would be astonished if the average mana value in Index ever went down to like 2. Like that would be egregious. Like that would take a long time.
I mean, yeah, I thought so too. But then when you look at a lot of the top played cards, you've got kind of your Demonic Tutor, your Vampiric Tutor, but then all your mana rocks. So the more they print Mana Crypt, Mana Vault, you get cards like that people are going to start putting in more and more decks. So it's all going to really, I hate to say this, it's going to depend on reprints. How available are they going to make a lot of these very, very high power cards more available for folks to put them in decks? I think that's going to be the big onus is where people are going to be able to lower their curve quite a bit. Payoffs are getting more and more expensive, but people have no problems casting them. So I really don't know.
Yeah, well, but also at the same time, like this is the format where I want to cast a Rise of the Dark Realms.
Exactly.
Like this is the format where I want to like use Yennette to swing a bunch of 9 drops into play. Like that is also still very much like end of the day. This doesn't strike me as this strikes me as an interesting figure, not an alarming figure is what I'm trying to say there, because this is still ultimately the format where we go to play the big splashy, ridiculous stuff that we don't get to do anywhere else. So there's an efficiency that we're definitely seeing on display with the mana curve curves trending downwards over the past 4 years. And it's definitely a substantial figure, but, you know, just one to keep an eye on, one to take note of, be interested about. And even Wizards of the Coast is devoting more of their time to making interesting three mana rocks, for example. And I imagine that three mana rocks are not the only way that they would combat against the ideas of efficiency being the most important thing, that they'd want to get the big and the splashy as much as possible too, in a lot of other ways, I'd expect. I think that's a big pillar of design these days.
I think the next most logical thing to maybe look at here are the most popular color pairs. Because we've seen some shifts there a little bit as well. And looking at the most popular colors, start with just the monocolor decks. Black is the most popular color if you're building a monocolor deck. 75,000 decks in the database. Mono red is second, 71. Then mono blue, 62. Mono green, 61,000. Mono white down at 49. And then colorless at just over 11,000 decks. Is there anything that really that's a surprise to any of you about those numbers?
Surprise? No, mono black is the best.
Yeah, that's not true, but...
I'm a little surprised to see red as high as it is, actually, to be honest. Red was a color that was lacking in EDH for a long time, particularly in card draw. So and it's definitely gotten way better. We've talked about that. But still in the back of my brain, I still imagine red is lagging. And to see it ahead of both green and blue was a little bit surprising to me.
See, I'm not, actually.
The surprise for me is to see green in fourth among the colors. Yeah. Like, that is the one that astonishes me more than anything. Red, good for it. Go off, queen. But green being in fourth, that's what gets me.
Yeah, and Mono Red's gotten so many good, juicy toys lately. They've gotten some very cool new commanders. There's a lot that they've been playing around with in the past year that I'm not surprised Mono Red is kind of seeing a surge up towards the top of the charts. Mono Green, we love to joke that green can do whatever it wants. And so seeing Mono Green kind of sitting there in fourth, that's super surprising to me. Mono White, whatever. but Mono Green being in fourth place, that's not a surprise. Or that is a surprise, I should say. Mono Red is not a surprise.
The green thing is a surprise, but I think I have an explanation for it.
Okay.
Because I don't think you do, but let's listen.
Well, so in green, you primarily are doing one thing. You're turning big creatures sideways and smashing people in the face. And I think that's just a thing that lends itself well to having green paired with something else than it is to just be doing it by itself in green. I think like the thing that you want to do when you're playing green makes you want to add another color in a way that maybe it doesn't necessarily work with blue that, you know, you think of things like control, or white, you think of things like white weenies. And of course, white, well, white decks are the lowest of the five colors minus colorless. So I think the same thing is true there a little bit. I think those colors tend to be a little bit one dimensional in terms of like what the plan and win condition is. And as a result of that, people tend to pair them with something else.
Yeah. Excitement of win conditions, I think, says a lot about the excitement to build a deck. And the ones near the top, black and red, feel to me like they have the most versatility in ways that they'd be able to accomplish a win, compared to like the excitement of green and white tend to be pretty straightforward win conditions. Or blue can take a little while. So that makes sense to me. But here's the real thing that gets me. It's actually the two color pairs. And this is where I'm going to... Like, Dana's going to feel really happy about himself, and Matt's going to be a little bit sad. So
I've already prepared myself, yes.
Let's get into the two-color pairs, because this is the one that's wild for me. The most popular two-color pair of all of the guild pairs is Dimir, at 99,000 decks that are Dimir within the database. In second place is Golgari, with 94. In third place is Simic, with 79,000. Just beneath that is Izzet, also roughly 79,000. Rakdos is coming after that at 76, then Gruul with 69, and then all of the white inclusive pairs are in the bottom four, which really blows. Orzhov, 65, Azorius, 64, Boros, second to last place there, Boros, also with 64, and then Matt, Selesnya with 62,000 is in last place for all of the color pairs. So blue-black is the top, and white-green is the bottom. That really, Dana loves playing blue-black, and Matt loves playing green-white, so I hope you guys get along.
All I can say is not everybody is the chosen one. You can't have that burden of playing Selesnya, so a lot of people give up, and that makes sense, and you just can't handle it.
It's too sophisticated a taste for everybody.
Yes, it's an acquired taste of finer things. I'm done here. So yeah, having all four of the white two color pairs in the bottom is just that's kind of mind blowing to think. Granted, we've always joked that Boros and Azorius were just, they didn't have a whole lot of identity, or they did and it was just very one-dimensional. But to see them rise up and then seeing green-white, that's kind of surprising to me. But then when you look at the numbers that we saw for mono-white being the least played mono-color, then you're kind of like, okay, well, nobody really likes white. But white just hasn't been able to keep up with what every other color has been doing the past couple of years.
Well, the thing I will note about the Dimir color pair's popularity that at least jumps out at me there is, you know, for a while I was trying to have one deck of all of the 10 color pairs. And I think Dimir was the last one I put together, because whenever I would sit down and look through the list of Dimir commanders, I could never really figure out what I wanted to do. Mm. None of them jumped out at me as being particularly interesting. Like, okay, well, this one is bad. This one mills. This one is bad and it mills. Like, those were what your options were, it felt like, for Dimir. But at some point in the last, I don't know, four-ish years or so, now if you look through the list of like possible Dimir commanders, there's a ton of things there that are, you know, aggressively enough costed that do different things and like suggest interesting builds in a way that wasn't really a thing 5-ish years ago. At least it didn't feel that way to me when I was trying to find a Dimir commander that jumped out at me. So it's definitely a color pair where at least I feel like they've added a lot of interesting options in a way that didn't exist 5 years ago.
And you can play all of your 3-mana draw twos and your 2-mana draw twos, and that's just why Dana loves it.
You are not wrong.
Exactly. A little bit of life, draw a few cards, it's all good.
Yeah. Well, and I find it interesting to note, so Golgari, I think when we did a similar episode to this 2 years ago, Golgari was the one in first place. So I'm sad to see it in second place, but I still respect it. And Izzet was also, I think, number two. And that has moved down to fourth place instead of being in second place. And it's moved down a bit, and I think that's just because other stuff has surged up a bit more. And so it's nice to see that fluctuation. You know, Boros has been in second place for a very long time. I think every time we've run a figure like this, it's always been in second place. Azorius used to be in last place, but this year we did see more invention in Azorius, kind of literally invention. It got stuff like vehicles and things like that. So I think that it's probably, you know, coming due in the next couple of years, we'll probably see a little bit of a Selesnya reinvention, and that might scramble this up. I mean, Rakdos used to be way near the bottom too. That is near the bottom also. And now it's like in fifth. It's got a very respectable, Rakdos also has a ton of versatile stuff. Prosper and Karazakar and a bunch of like interesting things happen for Rakdos too.
Yeah, I think Prosper is doing a lot of the heavy lifting here, Joey.
Yeah, exactly.
Prosper does have 11,000 decks by itself.
Oh my Lord.
And that alone is almost three times what the second place Angie Falconwrath has. So that, I think we found the reason for why Rakdos is jumping up.
Yeah, sometimes that's all it takes, is just a little bit of reinvention. So this is, again, more of a status update than it is like a, oh, Selesnya is doomed. Like, no, Selesnya is probably just do something interesting in the future.
We're not doomed. You're doomed.
Doomed indeed, Matt. So doomed that we're going to have to move to challenge the stats now, because that's just how doomed we are. There's so much data on EDH.
That doesn't make any sense. With it.
The best segue of my life. Don't you dare question
it. No, it's not. Your segues are doomed. That's what's really
my segues are doomed. But let's take a quick break and then we'll come back with some challenges. I'm proud of that one. I don't care what you say.
Oh my goodness.
Do you follow automotive news? Or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host / two of my top five friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.
This week's listener challenge of stats was sent to us by listener Space Marine, and the card is Cabal Paladin. It's 3 and a black for a human knight. It's a 4/2. It says, whenever you cast a historic spell, Cabal Paladin deals 2 damage to each opponent. And as a reminder, historic spells are artifacts, legendaries, and sagas. Yeah, 2 damage to each opponent every time you cast that thing is a significant amount of damage. And being only in 1,100 decks is not very much for a card that in their right deck could really consistently dome the entire table over and over and over again. Space Marine mentions is Diada, Binder of Will's deck. Just incidentally has 49 different historic spells in it, probably because it's running a lot of legendary creatures. And the last time you played it, it passively did 18 damage to the entire table. So that card alone almost shaved off basically half of his opponent's life totals. That's a significant amount of damage in a lot of decks, whether you are playing some kind of a black deck that's like Saga-based or Super Friends-based or Artifact-based or Legendary Creature-based. There's a lot of different themes that this would work very well in, and I agree. For something that does that much damage should be in more than just 1,000 decks.
That's really innocuous, but very deadly, and that's like my perfect type of thing. Like, that's one of my favorite types of things to be, is just like, oh yeah, no, I'm absolutely way into that. Dana, though, I'm gonna try and do you one better here.
Oh, excellent. All right.
I got to challenge the stats for a card that's in even fewer decks than that. And I'm doing this for you, my guy. I'm doing this because I want to impress you.
Thanks, man.
Because I want to know whether you've heard of the card Musician. Do you know this one? The card
is that Urza's block card?
It is from Ice Age, and it is
then no, I
weird.
Do not.
It's
Musician.
Isn't it the one? It's got the weird Drew Tucker art. It's a blue card. Right?
It is a blue card. It is definitely weird art. It is illustration by Drew Tucker there at the bottom of it. It is a 3-mana 1/3.
I got Dana.
We have both out Dana to Dana this week.
There it is.
A 3-mana 1/3 wizard with cumulative upkeep of 1. So at the beginning of your upkeep, you'll put an age counter on this permanence, and then you have to sacrifice it unless you continue to pay for each of those age counters that get put on it. But it has a very funky tap ability. Tap, put a music counter on target creature. If it doesn't have, at the beginning of your upkeep, destroy this creature unless you pay 1 for each music counter on it, it gains that ability. So you can continually tap it and put music counters on things, but it also has a cumulative upkeep that you have to continually pay, and that's kind of annoying. But I just think that it's very interesting to play this card in a Falco Spara Pact Weaver deck, which is that Nubant commander that cares about taking counters off of your stuff so that you can play more spells off of the top of your library. If you remove stuff from your stuff, then you can play more free things off the top of your deck, which just sounds absolutely fantastic to me. And those counters that Musician doles out can be really nasty, especially if you like proliferate them, which is what this deck definitely tends to do a lot of. So Dana, I am going for a very obscure, extremely pesky little piece of nuisance removal that Falco Spara will just continually remove the cumulative upkeep counters from, and I hope that you like it. Enjoy the music.
Well played, sir. I like it a lot. Good call. Nice.
Only in 14 out of 2,500 Falco Spara decks, so I am trying to out Dana this
you,
week.
You did it.
Well, I'm going to play the music and play you off the stage so that I can give my next challenge stats, if that's okay with you, Joseph.
Okay.
So the card this week that I'm challenging, and if you watch us over at twitch.tv/edhrecast, you saw this card do a whole lot of just ridiculous things when I played it in my Mishra deck. So the card is Wondrous Crucible, which is 7 mana for an artifact that says permanents you control have ward 2. And at the beginning of your end step, mill 2 cards, then exile a non-land card at random from your graveyard. You copy it, and you may cast the copy without paying its mana cost. This card is just silly. It does a whole lot of work. You're able to cast some very big things. And if you have a commander that can control what is in your graveyard, so you're able to narrow down and make sure that you always have some heater going on there, this is a fantastic card. Plus, it protects all your permanents. It gives you ward, or gives all your permanents ward 2, which is going to be fairly handy. I mean, Dana, you have an Ardent Essior deck that if you play it early, ward 2 is just, it's just hexproof for half the game. So,
yeah,
pretty fantastic card all around. I'm a big fan of it. But one deck that I don't see it getting played, granted, it is a fairly new commander, there's only 34 decks to it right now, is Mizzix Replica Rider, which is one of the new Jumpstart commanders that just came out. So it's 4 and a red for a... It's for an Izzet commander, really, but it's a 4/5 with flying that says whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, you may pay 1 and hybrid Izzet color, so a red and a blue. If you do, copy that spell, and you may choose new targets for the copy. If the copy is a permanent spell, it gains haste, and at the beginning of your end step, sacrifice this permanent. So, you're able to pay 2 mana, effectively, and copy whatever you want out of your graveyard. It is such a fantastic thing, and it is copy any spell. So you can get permanents, you can get non-permanent spells. Excuse me, that's how crazy it is. I'm tongue-tied over this combo right here. So you're able to cast these big wombo spells for free, and then pay 2 mana to copy them. So if you have extra turns that you're like wanting to do on that, if you have whatever this typical deck is doing, it's a lot of really big spells. And so what's better than casting for free than paying not very much to repeatedly copy them? I'm a big fan of this synergy. There's a lot of really cool stuff going on in the deck, so it's probably a little hard to make room, which is why it's not showing up in very much at all. It's a tight list, but if you need something that's just going to give you free cast triggers from somewhere that's not your hand, Wondrous Crucible is a fantastic place to start.
Wondrous Crucible is just a good graveyard card.
Yeah.
Just like, it mills for you. It gives you a free thing. Like, this is how you Deathbridge Chant. Like, this is, yeah, this feels like a little bit of a fixed Deathbridge Chant kind of situation. I would love this in, like, a Quintorius deck as well to remove stuff from my graveyard every turn.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, Chainer, red-black Chainer that also plays stuff out of your graveyard. This is, plus that ward. I mean, you can just cheat this into play in a lot of artifact decks and just protect yourself. This is a good card. Why have I not heard of this thing as much? Like, this is just a good card.
I mean, it was in the Mishra precon, and I don't know if a whole lot of folks are getting... So Wondrous Crucible's only in 1,200 decks total right now, which that alone seems kind of low, but... Also, I just don't know how many people have had a chance to get Brothers of War quite yet.
Yeah.
Hopefully the holidays are very kind to them and these precons find themselves in some stockings, because I absolutely love these pre-constructed decks. I think they're great design. So yeah, hopefully people get a chance to play with these cards.
Yeah, that's a fun one. Like, don't let the 7 mana fool you. Artifact decks know how to cheat that thing right into play. Yeah, that's a really cool one. Okay, let's get back into some color breakdowns here. That's what we were talking about right before we left off. We had just talked about some 2-color pairs, but Matt, how do you feel about 3-color pairs? What's going on with them?
So I'm more fond of 3-color pairs than Dana is, since Dana hates 3 colors.
Not wrong.
This is true.
when you look at the top 3-color pairs, you're going to see, which is kind of surprising to me, you're going to see Mardu at the top. Then moving down, you'll see Esper, Grixis, Sultai. And in 5th place, you see Naya. So a lot of just colors all over the place really there. And then the bottom half, you see Jund, Teemer, Bant, Jeskai. And at the very bottom in last place, you have the Abzan. So it's kind of telling. They're all fairly spread out. You can kind of see a natural trickle down. But when you look at the top compared to the bottom, Mardu has 76,000 decks, almost 77,000, whereas Abzan has under 35,000. That is over twice as many decks are playing Mardu, and that's kind of wild to me.
Edgar Markov.
True. But no, that's a much wider spread than we see from between the Dimir and Celestian decks, for example, over under the color pairs.
Absolutely.
Where we're looking at about like a 1/3 difference. This is more than twice as much.
I'm just astonished that Abzan is so near the bottom. But like, I mean, when you look at the most popular Mardu commanders, you've got your Isshins, you've got your Edgar Markovs, you've got your Kalias. And when you look at Abzan, you've got Miracle, who's repping like 4,000 decks or something like that. And that's the top Abzan commander. So yeah, Mardu's really pulling a lot of commanders that have 11,000 or 9,000 decks of their name. And Abzan doesn't even have half that for its most popular commander right now. So I think that's probably another color combination that is due for a little bit of a renaissance.
I think also part of that is when you look at these 3-color decks, a lot of the partner pairs in the colors that can go in to make up Mardu, and not even the partner pairs, even some of the 1-color partner commanders are relatively popular, whereas the Abzan ones are less so. The least popular commanders for those colors tend to be in the Abzan colors, whereas Mardu, you're looking at stuff that does see quite a bit of play, so people are mixing and matching, I think, commanders that are very popular in the Mardu colors the way they maybe aren't in Abzan.
Yeah, the number one Abzan commander would be the number 8 most popular Mardu commander, just by number of decks alone.
Yeah.
That kind of tells you just how powerful the Mardu color combination is. But also, I can't really think of the last time we've got a kind of a compelling Abzan colored commander. They've played around a little bit. Miracle Lord of Bones was kind of cool, I guess, but that's also the most popular commander in this combination. The rest are kind of old staple commanders that just have been around for forever, but kind of people have moved on. You have Gave Guru Spores, you have Carador Ghost Chieftain, and none of those, people don't really get excited about those anymore, whereas you have
sure.
a bunch of fairly recent commanders near the top of the Mardu list.
Yeah, very much. And I guess as we move to an observation of four color and five color, I kind of want to actually expand even further out for you guys and do a color breakdown of the whole format here. Like how many decks, like what percentage of the format is four color, five color decks? How many decks in the format are colorless? How many decks in the format are monocolor or two color? So let's move to that now as we're expanding even further out. So colorless decks make up less than 1% of the format, like 11,000, like you said earlier, Matt. But monocolor decks make up 17% of the format, which I think is especially fascinating. Here, though, is what really gets me. Two color decks make up 40% of the format. Good for two color decks, because a couple of years ago, it was some closer to like 32%, and now it's up to 40%. Like two color decks are in the lead. Three color decks make up 31% of the format. That has actually moved down compared to the past 2 years. It was closer to 35 a while ago, and now it's at 31. And then four color decks are less than 4% of the format, and five color decks are about 7% of the format. There's 129,000 five color decks in the format. Four color decks, we obviously haven't seen too much innovation since Commander 2016. We do have the four color Omnath, good for it. There's certainly partner combinations, but there hasn't been a lot of evolution in that. Whereas five color decks, I mean, the Ur-Dragon, Kenrith, Goshintai, there's tons of interesting stuff going on there. So five color decks are always going to stay in a really nice popular thing all to themselves. But I, you know, in expanding, looking far out, looking at all of those things, I'm just astonished. Good for two color decks making up 40% of the format. Good for them.
One thing I think that might be relative there to, or relevant there too as well, is if you want to play with some of the new backgrounds, you're stuck playing two colors or I guess monocolor technically. There's no way to do that in three colors. And I wonder if that isn't something that this year made a bit of a difference. People wanting to brew those background commanders, and you really weren't given a choice to do that with three colors.
Maybe. I'm just surprised because, I mean, New Capenna just happened and that was a three color focused set.
True. Like, yeah.
Well, and in the, when we first checked these stats, it was right before Ikoria came out too, which was a three colored theme set. And then we just had New Capenna, which was another three color theme set. And so seeing that three-color decks are occupying 4% less of the format is kind of shocking, honestly. Like it, I'm very, very surprised at that because we've had so much support and push for it. We had the Triomes and all that stuff. So to see that two-color decks are moving up, I'm a little shocked by that.
That's a good point. Like what you just, I want to clarify what you mentioned there. When we first checked these stats, that was 2 years ago when three color decks were about 35% of the format. That was right before Ikoria. So In the time after Ikoria and New Capenna, it has still gone down despite having two three color focus sets across the past 2 years. That is wild. That is absolutely wild. That's a really good thing to point out.
And maybe the antipode to talking about how two color decks were something you were kind of forced to build if you wanted to build with backgrounds. The opposite of that is that there really wasn't anything new added if you wanted to build four colors.
Yeah.
So like you were digging back into Magic's past if you wanted to build a four color deck, and that's probably shouldn't be surprising that that's not the most attractive thing to people. So the amount of four color decks dropped, and that is kind of expected given that.
This is the thing that I definitely like to see. I think that it, you know, really overpowered three color commanders is a thing that we've like kind of been a little tainted by over the past couple of years. So to see two color get more focus, and especially if monocolor can get even more focus as well, I would love more reasons to play monocolor decks. So those are things that I hope that, like, it goes to show some efforts at Wizards of the Coast are paying off here, I think, like to make interesting, compelling two color decks that are more exciting than some generically powerful three color commanders out there. And also just, I like building with fewer colors because I like that restriction a whole lot. Like not just playing all of the best stuff in these colors, having stuff that like I feel limited in what I can play. That is just where my heart's at here. So I'm happy to see these figures be where they are. But I don't know. That's just me. And Dana, I also happen to know, feels the same way. Matt, I'm not sure how you feel about that. Maybe you love five color stuff even more.
If the commander compels me, then I'm going to build it. Like I've built two color, I build three color. Like it doesn't really matter a whole lot to me. I have found myself building more two color commanders, but also that's because I think Wizards of the Coast is giving us more two color options. It's kind of hard to support three color commanders, A, at a standard set, which is where a lot of stuff comes in. But
true.
In the commander products, even when they throw a three color deck together, sometimes they don't have the most support. It's not the most interesting. They're kind of doing it just to get as many cards out there as possible. So it doesn't really matter to me. I care more about the commander, more about the strategy that I'm trying to build around it than I do the amount of colors. If it's a 3-4 color, whatever. If it's monocolor, then cool. Then they finally made a monocolor commander. That's interesting to me.
Maybe that's the actual secret here. It's just a density issue because in every standard set, we have so many two-color legends that are the signpost uncommons for what that draft environment is supposed to look like for that two-color pair. So maybe it is just like an accidental by dint of the way that standard sets are being designed now, just with so many uncommon commanders that happen to be legendary. Yeah, that's a good thing to note. I appreciate you bringing that forward because I didn't think about that until now. Look at you being wise.
I try to be insightful every now and then. So why don't we set our sights on, I'm trying to force a segue here, set our sights on the number of legends. There we go. I segued. There we go.
That is actually a good segue because we just mentioned, look how many legends there are in every set. And well, how is that affecting the number of legendary cards that appear in the 99 on average these days? This is another very interesting figure for us to take a look at. It's a little bit like the mana curves thing that we saw. This has been a big jump. When we compare the current 2-year chunk that EDHREC is measuring data of compared to the last 2-year chunk before then that we were measuring data of, the number of legends in a deck has absolutely gone up. It used to be nearly 6 legends in a deck, and now it is nearly 9 legendary cards in a deck. Like, that's a jump over that 2-year chunk. That's a big difference, going from almost 6 to an almost 9 number of legendary cards in a deck. I don't know, Dana, you have a legendary deck. What do you make of this?
I mean, in not even a legendary deck, just like even in non-legendary decks, it has definitely, I've noticed, affected some of the things I've done. I'm less likely to run clone-style effects now because I'm going to have less valid targets that I can use to copy things on my side of the board. Whereas something like a card I've gotten very fond of because of the increase in legendary creatures is Manamo, School at Water's Edge, that I can use to untap legendary things I control. So like that card's gotten significantly better.
Sure.
So it's definitely something that's impacted all of my decks at least a little bit.
Matt, what do you think?
I mean, everybody was like, Relic of Legends, I don't know about that card. No, it is factually hard statistics good and getting better for your decks. I mean, the amount of legends has risen 50%. So if at this rate, I mean, granted, we'll have like 99 cards that are all legendary, but Relic of Legends it's a totally valid card to be running in the typical deck, because if you have 9 or 10 legendary creatures in there, that's just, plus your commander, you have access to your commander at all times, people. Relic of Legends, it's just a great quality 3-mana mana rock. And it's all these incidental kind of tweaks and increases that you're going to see cards like Relic of Legends popping up in more and more decks as a result of more legends in the 99.
Very fair. Very. Yeah, this does affect, like, this is a figure that I think does have an active change on the way that we build our decks. And I think it also... This is where I enter the dangerous, maybe tinfoil hat-ish kind of part of the podcast. But like, I think it also has a potentially dangerous effect on the way that Wizards of the Coast designs cards. For example, on this show, I have lauded the card Arrhenicus's Vile Duplication, which makes a token of one of your creatures, except the token has flying and the token is not legendary. That card is so good. That card is basically another Spark Double, only it's uncommon. It gives you a token. It's flying. Like, that is such a good card. I also don't want Wizards to make more of these effects.
Right.
Wizards has gotten a little bit more free with making, but the tokens aren't legendary, where like Helm of the Host used to be one of the only ways to do this, and it was a lot of mana to make that happen, and now non-legendary copies are becoming more and more of a thing. And I get why that's a thing that Wizards wants to do, because especially when you're, you know, playing with a new player who wants to clone a legend, and they find out, when I cast this stuff in my Reflections of Lyara automatically kills the copy because this random zombie that I cast happened to be legendary, that's not a good feeling. So I get why they're making more cards that would like want to reduce that bad feeling. I just don't think it's a good idea for us to have so many copies of legendary stuff. Like, that is an accidental byproduct of them making so many legendary things, is making stuff that can clone legendary things. And I think that's dangerous. I think it's really dangerous.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. That was the first thing I thought of, Joey. Well, I knew where you were going when you mentioned Arrhenicus's Vile Duplication. It's a fantastic card, and I love it, and I hope we never see it again.
See, I don't mind having a glut of some of these, I'm going to call them opportunities, to have just cool design space, but too much of one thing isn't, too much of a good thing, I should say, doesn't always mean it stays good. I mean, we look at Treasure, we look at Goad. So, yes, there's some cool stuff going on, but I just hope that they keep it tempered a little bit. That's my concern, is if they get carried away with it.
And that's, I think we've seen Miram Sentinel Worm this year, which is the teamer dragon commander that whenever another non-token dragon enters the battlefield under your control, you make a token copy of it, except the token isn't legendary if that dragon is legendary. Like, that's another place where I think we did see it maybe go a little bit too far. Or maybe the thing that went too far with this card is that it also has Ward 2. I've seen Wizards put Ward 2 on a lot of things just incidentally. Like, Gearson Starn is another commander. The ping that, like, amplifies your stuff if you've dealt exactly one damage instead it deals additional damage or something like that. And it also has an incidental Ward 2. And I feel like that's the next thing that will be a little bit proliferated. Like, not outright hexproof, but a little bit of extra ward here and there. And I'm like, I think that might actually still be kind of like, for some players, though.
Just a little bit of ward for a treat.
And just a little bit of ward for a treat. Wow. Okay. Right. Well played.
Well, there's that.
You know what, Dana? I think that that probably puts a better button on that idea, that topic of conversation than I ever could. So, all right. Well done. Matt, I want to throw this final question to you. Like, how do you feel about the format going into 2023? Like, how do you feel about this snapshot now that we've zoomed out and seen all of this data?
I kind of like what we talked about recently when we talked about kind of our 2022 as a wrap up. I'm curious to see what kind of trends continue and what is just kind of a flash in the pan. Do we see more players shifting towards two colors just because we have the glut of options with the legends there? Are curves going to keep going down a little bit? Is there going to be just like nonstop efficiency upgrades for decks? So seeing what trends continue and what trends start to reverse. And that's going to be my big, big point of interest for me personally. I'm sad that Selesnya seems, you know, like I said, not everybody's cut out to play Selesnya, and the numbers are proving that. So hopefully we get some more interesting commander design for these low ranking color combinations. Like I said, I mean, I can't remember the last time we saw an Abzan commander that was like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. So hopefully we get some love for these color combinations that are kind of lagging behind a little bit.
Okay. That's a good mission statement for the upcoming years. I'm right there with you. They are due a renaissance. Dana, what about you? How do you feel about the snapshot of EDH at the end of 2022?
I think the format is pretty healthy, and I think the numbers kind of bear that out. I think we're you know, talking about this, the average mana value of decks dropping. I think that's kind of a natural thing, if that continues to drop at the rate it's dropping, I might be concerned, but I'm going to bet it doesn't when we look back at this in 2 years, say. You know, we're seeing shifts in the color pairs and stuff people play. What's the most popular? What's less popular? I think that's pretty healthy too. I think it would be a bad thing if that stuff stayed stagnant. I think seeing motion based on what, you know, colors are getting interesting new cards printed, what pairs are getting interesting new things, mechanics like backgrounds printed. I think the numbers all make me feel pretty glad for the format. I mean, we still have a few nagging concerns that we talked about, or things like just the sheer amount of sets to deal with. But I think overall, I'm pretty happy with the state of the game.
I agree with you on the stagnation point, but a piece of me wonders, are you just saying this because Dimir was in first place and Selesnya was in last place so that you can gloat over that?
I think everything is finally lining up the way it should. I think it's what that means. Everything has course corrected. Nature is healing.
Now I know that you're truly not trustworthy, but we'll find a new host eventually.
Oh, man. All right. Well, on that bombshell, listeners, we would love to know what you think about this data overview and the trends for EDH here at the end of 2022. But fellas, let's call this episode to a close. And if our listeners want to get in touch with us, where is it that they can find us all? Matt?
So you can find me on the Twitters at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55. And don't forget, we are streaming over at twitch.tv/EDHRecCast every Wednesday evening. So make sure you tune in for that fun as well.
And Dana?
You can find me on Twitterbird at Dana Roach. You can hear me on my other podcast, CMDR Central. I'm writing articles for EDH Rec and Commander's Herald. And you can find all of us together at patreon.com/EDHRecCast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me on the socials at Joseph M. Schultz. And you can find the cast at EDH RecCast on Facebook and on Twitter. Plus, if you've got a question, you can contact us at EDHRecCast@gmail.com. Our thanks go out once again to Chase for assisting me with the post-production of the show. You can find them online at Mana Curves. Listeners, we are going to take a brief break for the holidays, so there won't be an episode next week, but we will see you again in the new year. We say this at the end of every year, so please remember that Black lives still matter, Black trans lives still matter, and hey, go play some magical games with some magical people. We'll be back at you next year with more data and insights, but until then, remember, EDH, wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.